Stay Close stands as one of Harlan Coben's most psychologically intricate thrillers, weaving together the lives of three people haunted by a violent event from 17 years ago. Since its 2012 release, the novel has captivated millions of readers worldwide and was recently adapted into a hit Netflix series, further cementing Coben's reputation as the master of the domestic thriller. Stephen King famously praised the book as one of those stories that grabs you from the first page and doesn't let go, while Gillian Flynn called it suburban noir at its most addictive. The novel's exploration of how the past never truly stays buried resonates deeply with readers who wonder what might happen if their own carefully constructed lives suddenly unraveled. Megan Pierce appears to have it all. The Viking stove, sub-zero fridge, two beautiful children, and a loving husband. Yet beneath this veneer of suburban perfection lies a woman suffocating in domesticity, secretly longing for her former life as Cassie, an Atlantic City stripper who thrived on danger and excitement. Orphaned young and drawn to the adrenaline of nightlife, Megan had escaped that world 17 years ago when it became dangerous, accidentally stumbling into domestic bliss with her attorney husband, Dave. But the carefully constructed walls between her past and present begin to crumble when she receives a mysterious phone call asking for Cassie. The call leads to a meeting with Lorraine, a raspy-voiced woman from her former life who reveals someone has spotted Cassie returning to La Creme, the club where she once worked. Though Megan had only visited once during a real estate seminar, this single indiscretion threatens to unravel everything. Most alarming is Lorraine's claim that she's seen Stuart Green, a violent, obsessive man from Megan's past who was supposed to be gone forever. This revelation forces Megan to confront the question, how long can you run from your past before it catches up with you? As Megan struggles with her secret identity, we sense her internal conflict, the yearning for excitement versus the love for her family. The suburban life that once felt like salvation now feels like a prison, yet the alternative means destroying everything she's built. This tension forms the emotional core of her character, making her relatable despite her deception. We understand her fear that the truth could shatter not just her marriage, but her very sense of self. Detective Broom carries his own burden, the unsolved disappearance of Stuart Green 17 years ago. Nothing in Sarah Green's house has changed since that day. The dated lighting, white leather couch, old recliner, as though the walls themselves are grieving. Sarah's children, mere babies when their father vanished, are now nearly grown. Broom has become a surrogate figure in their lives, attending dance recitals and teaching baseball, his commitment to the case extending far beyond professional duty. When Carlton Flynn, another local man, disappears on February 18th, exactly 17 years to the day after Stuart Green vanished, Broom's investigative instincts are triggered. Digging deeper, he discovers 9 men who loosely fit a pattern of disappearances, though the dates varied. Most missing men run away by choice, but this pattern troubles him deeply. The coincidence seems too significant to ignore, suggesting something sinister connecting these cases. Broom's character represents the relentless pursuit of truth, even when the trail has gone cold. His relationship with his ex-wife Erin, who still assists him with cases despite their divorce and her remarriage, adds emotional complexity to his character. Their professional partnership, complicated by lingering feelings, creates a poignant backdrop to the investigation. Broom's dedication to solving cold cases stems not just from professional pride, but from a deeply human need to provide closure to families left in limbo, particularly Sarah Green, with whom he shares a complicated history that includes one shameful drunken night 12 years ago. The detective's methodical approach contrasts sharply with the chaos unfolding around him. His careful examination of surveillance footage, patient interviews with witnesses, and willingness to revisit old assumptions make him the moral compass of the story, someone who believes truth matters, no matter how long it takes to uncover. Ray Levine's life has transformed from promising photojournalist to grade-A loser. Once an award-winning war photographer for the Associated Press, he now works as fake paparazzi for Celeb Experience, a service where wannabes pay to be stalked by cameras. His days are spent photographing bar mitzvahs and staging fake celebrity encounters, his nights drowning in Jack Daniels until he blacks out on his couch. Ray's downward spiral began 17 years ago, coinciding with Stuart Green's disappearance and Cassie's sudden vanishing. Though he rarely speaks of it, the trauma of that night haunts his every waking moment. In rare moments of clarity between alcohol-induced hazes, he sees blood, vivid flashbacks that suggest something far more traumatic than simply losing a girlfriend. His life takes another dramatic turn when he's attacked with a baseball bat while walking to his car. The thief steals only his cherished Leica camera, ignoring his wallet. When Ray later sees a news report about missing Carlton Flynn, he realizes with horror that his attacker hadn't wanted the camera. They wanted a specific picture he'd taken earlier that day at the park he visits every year on the anniversary of that tragic, bloody event from 17 years ago. Ray's character embodies how trauma can derail a promising life. His self-medication with alcohol, isolation in a squalid basement apartment, and acceptance of degrading work all stem from his inability to process what happened that night. Yet beneath the cynical exterior remains the sharp eye of a photojournalist, someone trained to observe details others miss. This skill, dulled by alcohol, but never completely extinguished, may prove crucial to unraveling the mystery that connects all these characters. When Megan visits Harry Sutton, a former prestigious attorney who now champions Atlantic City's underdogs, she sets in motion a series of events that bring her past and present into dangerous proximity. Harry, overwhelmed with emotion upon seeing her, reveals the police still want to question her about her disappearance years ago. Meanwhile, Detective Broom learns from Harry that he's found Cassie, the stripper who vanished the same night as Stuart Green. Their meeting establishes strict ground rules. It must remain off record, and Broom can't pursue Cassie afterward. When they finally meet, Cassie/Megan explains that Stuart Green was violently obsessive. She had gone to the Iron Ore ruins in Wharton State Forest after threatening to tell Green's wife about their relationship if he didn't leave her alone. This threat had triggered severe violence from Green, who promised to torture her and harm her friends if she spoke out. While at the park, she heard rustling and someone crying out. When she investigated, she found Stuart Green lying on his back, covered in blood. Believing him dead, she panicked and fled rather than report it, fearing she would be blamed. This confession shifts the investigation dramatically, suggesting Stuart Green might truly be dead rather than one of the disappeared. The collision of Megan's carefully separated worlds creates unbearable tension. Her suburban life with Dave and their children exists in stark contrast to the seedy clubs and dangerous characters of her past. As these worlds begin to merge, Megan must navigate increasingly treacherous territory, making impossible choices between truth and safety, past and present. The narrative masterfully builds suspense as these separate storylines begin to converge. Each character holds pieces of the puzzle, but none has the complete picture. Their individual journeys toward the truth create a complex web of intersecting motivations, secrets, and dangers. As Broom delves deeper into the case, he makes a crucial discovery with his ex-wife Erin's help. All the missing men disappeared on Mardi Gras in different years. This pattern, invisible until now because the lunar calendar shifts the date of Mardi Gras each year, suggests a calculated, long-term operation rather than random disappearances. The investigation takes another turn when Broom receives an anonymous photograph showing Carlton Flynn in the Pine Barrens on the night he disappeared. The photo was taken at the same iron ore ruins where Megan claims to have seen Stuart Green's body 17 years earlier. This connection can't be coincidental, suggesting the same location has been used repeatedly for violence. Further complicating matters, Broom learns that years earlier, a man named Ross Gunther was murdered in that exact spot. The victim was stabbed multiple times, and someone named Ricky Mannion was convicted and still serving life at Rahway, despite maintaining his innocence. When Broom visits Mannion in prison, the enormous man tearfully insists he was framed, pointing out inconsistencies in the evidence. Blood on his shirt, but none on his pants, despite the bloody crime scene. Mannion reveals his girlfriend Stacy Paris was a stripper who occasionally worked as a prostitute, and Gunther had been one of her clients. He attacked Gunther because he'd roughed Stacy up, creating a pattern similar to what Broom heard about Stuart Green and Carlton Flynn abusing women. This suggests the victims might be connected not just by the date and location of their disappearances, but by their treatment of women. The pattern reveals a methodical mind at work, someone patient enough to strike only once a year on the same holiday, possibly targeting specific types of men. This realization transforms the investigation from separate missing persons cases into the hunt for what might be a serial killer with a very specific motivation. Among the most disturbing elements of the story are the characters known only as Ken and Barbie, a clean-cut young couple whose wholesome appearance masks profoundly sadistic tendencies. These former counselors from Camp Sunlit, with the T shaped like a cross, first connected over their shared fascination with inflicting pain on others. Their initial encounters at the camp's disciplinary cabin revealed a mutual understanding. Both derived pleasure from administering punishment to troublemakers, though they carefully maintained their public image as model counselors. Their taste for torture evolved methodically, growing from punishing camp troublemakers to working for organized crime syndicates. They positioned themselves as avenging angels while carrying out increasingly brutal acts, justifying their sadism through a warped moral framework that allowed them to see themselves as instruments of justice rather than mere killers. Their carefully maintained appearance, she with her perfectly styled blonde hair and pearls, he with his pressed khakis and winning smile, allowed them to move seamlessly through polite society. When they target attorney Harry Sutton, their methods reach new levels of brutality. Using a soldering iron with clinical precision, they torture him for information about Cassie, demonstrating both their expertise in inflicting pain and their complete detachment from human suffering. Harry's death from heart failure due to the extreme torture marks the first confirmed murder directly connected to the investigation, dramatically raising the stakes and proving that whoever is behind the disappearances will employ any means necessary to protect their secrets. Ken and Barbie's involvement reveals a complex layer to the mystery. They operate as contractors for someone with extensive resources and connections, an entity desperate enough to hire functional psychopaths to silence potential witnesses. Their presence creates immediate danger for anyone getting close to the truth, particularly Megan, whose connection to Harry through her investigation puts her directly in their crosshairs. Their methods become increasingly bold, suggesting their employer's growing desperation to contain the situation. The couple's disturbing dynamic manifests in chilling ways. They discuss wedding venues and marriage plans while cleaning torture implements, or debate whether a suburban mother deserves their attention over a casual dinner. Their relationship appears genuinely loving within their twisted framework, making them even more unsettling. This creates a chilling portrait of functional psychopathy in action. They maintain jobs, pay taxes, and chat with neighbors, all while harboring monstrous impulses and carrying out calculated acts of violence. Their ability to blend seamlessly into normal society while compartmentalizing their sadistic activities makes them particularly dangerous antagonists, capable of approaching victims without raising suspicion until it's far too late for escape. As the investigation accelerates, Ray and Megan reunite after 17 years at Lucy, the iconic elephant-shaped tourist attraction where they once conducted their clandestine meetings. The massive wooden structure, a remnant of Atlantic City's golden age, serves as both shelter and symbolic witness to their emotionally charged encounter. Their meeting unfolds beneath Lucy's weathered belly, where countless lovers had carved their initials over decades, including their own faded R+ from what feels like a lifetime ago. Megan finally reveals the haunting truth that drove her away. On that fateful night, she discovered Stuart Green's bloodied body sprawled across the boardwalk's wooden planks. In her panic and shock, she'd immediately assumed Ray, with his volatile temper and fierce protectiveness, had killed him. The weight of this revelation visibly affects Ray, who appears both hurt and angry at her assumption. He explains his own version of events, arriving at their meeting spot to find only traces of violence, spending years searching every possible lead to find her, eventually fleeing to Los Angeles, where he built a new life as a photographer, only to feel an inexplicable pull back to Atlantic City's familiar shores. Ray shares his ritual of visiting the ruins every February 18th, photographing the decaying landscape as a way to process his grief and maintain a connection to their shared past. When he mentions the recent attack, someone attempting to steal his camera after he unknowingly captured images of Carlton Flynn on the night of his disappearance, both realize the significance. The attacker's desperate attempt to obtain those photos suggests a direct link between Stuart Green and Carlton Flynn's disappearances, pointing to a single perpetrator. Meanwhile, Broom and his investigative team make a discovery that transforms their understanding of the case. In an abandoned well, partially hidden by years of debris and vegetation, they uncover a macabre collection of bodies. Carlton Flynn's corpse lies at the top, relatively fresh compared to the others, while deeper layers reveal increasingly decomposed remains. Forensic specialist Samantha Bhadraktari, working methodically in the dim light, estimates between 10 and 20 victims, their bones telling a story of systematic murder spanning years. The positioning and preservation of the bodies suggest a methodical killer who returned to the same disposal site repeatedly, confirming Broom's growing suspicion that the Mardi Gras disappearances were the work of a calculating serial killer. The investigation takes a violent turn when Megan finds herself fighting for survival against Barbie, a mysterious blonde woman who attacks her with surgical precision, wielding a serrated knife. The confrontation unfolds in brutal close quarters, with Megan drawing upon long-buried instincts from her former life. In a desperate struggle, she manages to turn her attacker's weapon against her, delivering a fatal wound to Barbie's abdomen. The violence erupts just as Dave, Megan's husband, arrives on the scene, forcing him to witness firsthand the fierce survivor beneath his wife's carefully constructed suburban facade. His shocked expression reveals the permanent shift in how he sees the woman he thought he knew completely, as blood pools on the concrete and sirens wail in the distance. In the investigation's final stages, the pieces fall into place with a shocking revelation. Lorraine, the bartender from La Creme who first contacted Megan, is the serial killer. For 17 years, she has been targeting abusive men, particularly those who mistreated women at the club. Her motive becomes clear through conversations with Broom. She saw herself as an avenging angel, eliminating men who hurt women. The truth about Ray's involvement also emerges when Megan visits him in prison. When directly asked if he killed Stuart Green, Ray explains that he never left her a message to meet at the park that night. He had followed her there out of curiosity. When he found Stuart dead with his throat slit, he assumed Megan had killed him. To protect her, Ray disposed of the body, dismembering it with a chainsaw and dumping the weighted bags near Cape May. This revelation breaks Megan's heart as she finally understands Ray's sacrifice. He had disposed of Stuart Green's body thinking he was protecting her, carrying this terrible secret for 17 years while suffering from her abandonment. Before leaving the interrogation room, Megan promises to do everything possible to help free Ray, feeling deeply indebted to him. As Megan exits, she suddenly realizes something troubling. It was Lorraine who had passed on the false message to meet Ray at the ruins, started rumors about Stuart Green still being alive, and claimed impossible knowledge about Megan's whereabouts. This final piece completes the puzzle, revealing Lorraine as the mastermind behind 17 years of calculated murders. 2 weeks after Lorraine's capture, several storylines reach their conclusions. Lorraine reveals to Broom how she found Cassie/Megan when she returned to the club for a visit, following her back to get her real name and address. She confesses to planting Carlton Flynn's medal in Ray's apartment by tossing it through his window. Lorraine notes the irony that violence awakened something in her while it destroyed Ray. Her case becomes an international sensation, with her lawyer, Hester Krimstein, spinning her as an avenging angel who saved abused women rather than a serial killer. This complex portrayal reflects the moral ambiguity at the heart of the case. While Lorraine's methods were unquestionably wrong, her targets were themselves predators who had caused significant harm. At Stuart Green's funeral, Sarah tells Broom she finally has closure and hints at wanting to see him again, suggesting a possible new beginning for the detective who has carried this case for 17 years. Ray reconnects with his old boss at the Associated Press and gets a job as a photographer on the dangerous Pakistan-Afghanistan border. Though tempted to contact Megan, he decides never to see her again, recognizing that some chapters must remain closed. Megan settles back into domestic life with Dave and their children, having confessed everything to her husband. Though Dave struggles to reconcile her history with their life together, they begin the difficult process of rebuilding trust. Megan enjoys the normalcy of suburban life while acknowledging that restlessness may eventually return, suggesting that while we can make peace with our past, we cannot completely escape who we are. Stay Close ultimately explores how the past shapes but need not determine our future. Each character confronts their history in different ways. Megan by running from it and constructing an entirely new identity. Ray by drowning his memories in alcohol and abandoning his promising career, and Broom by obsessively pursuing cold cases that mirror his own unresolved pain. Their intertwined journeys suggest that while we cannot change what happened, we can choose how we respond to it and whether to let past trauma define our present reality. The novel delves deep into questions about identity and reinvention. Can we truly become someone new, or will our essential nature eventually reassert itself? Megan's careful construction of her suburban life, complete with a loving husband, children, and PTA meetings, stands in stark contrast to her former existence as Cassie, the seductive dancer at La Creme. Her daily struggle to maintain this new persona while suppressing her old instincts reveals the complexity of genuine transformation. Ray's gradual journey from broken man back to professional photographer demonstrates how artistic passion can serve as a path to redemption, while Broom's evolution from obsessed detective to someone capable of emotional vulnerability shows how letting go of the past can open doors to new possibilities. The ripple effects of violence and secrets form a central theme throughout the narrative. A single violent night at Atlantic City's La Creme Club set in motion a chain of events that would alter countless lives, from the immediate victims to their families, from the investigators to the community at large. The disappearance of Stuart Green becomes more than just another missing persons case. It becomes a lens through which to examine how trauma echoes through time, affecting relationships, career choices, and personal identity for decades to come. Yet despite its dark themes, the story ultimately offers hope through multiple paths to redemption. The truth, however painful, serves as a catalyst for healing, whether through Megan's eventual confrontation with her past identity, Ray's reconnection with his artistic passion, or Broom's willingness to open himself to new possibilities. The novel suggests that understanding can indeed lead to forgiveness, both of others and oneself. Even after 17 years of carefully guarded secrets and calculated decisions, second chances remain possible for those brave enough to embrace them and face the consequences of their past actions. The story reinforces that redemption isn't about erasing the past, but about integrating it into who we choose to become. Through its complex character arcs, the novel demonstrates that while our past experiences inevitably shape us, they need not imprison us. The key lies in acknowledging rather than denying our history, using it as a foundation for growth rather than a cage that limits our future possibilities.